From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. Amherst College, the elite liberal arts school in western Massachusetts, is dropping its admissions preference for the children of graduates. It's a big change in admissions practices, one that activists have been calling on many schools to make. Here with us to explain why Amherst is ending the policy and whether other colleges might follow suit is WBUR reporter Max Larkin. Hi, Max.
Hi, Arun.
So how did Amherst come to this decision?
Well, it was in keeping with a trend at the college. They've been a kind of relative trailblazer, at least among elite private colleges, in trying to make room for lower income and first generation applicants. The college's president, Biddy Martin, says she and the board of trustees had been discussing the move actually since 2019, and it just felt right at this moment.
I think we're in a moment where we're looking, trying to be responsible in reaction to criticisms, especially of elite institutions, whether we're serving the public, the students who have less, as well as we should be serving them.
And Arun, accompanying the change is a stepped up investment in financial aid at Amherst to $71 million a year. Now, Martin says most alumni have been supportive and the board made the move by a unanimous vote. But she says it also helps that she's planned to retire at the end of this school year. It means she can do what she thinks of as the right thing and her successor will get sort of a clean slate.
Now, how have colleges like Amherst and other schools that haven't changed course, how have they justified these legacy admissions? It definitely doesn't seem to be very meritocratic.
Yeah, it does not seem very meritocratic, and the practice has been justified by two sort of interrelated arguments, and the first is cultural, that having multiple generations of a family attend a school builds a kind of institutional memory. And then I think the second is more practical, that legacy admissions promotes long-term contributions by such a family to the school. But, you know, it's also controversial. There's been some dispute over whether legacy preferences actually do promote kind of long-term generosity of that kind.
And tell us about who it is that's been pushing for this change at Amherst and other places. And how are they reacting? Are they happy?
They are happy. I think legacy preferences have become kind of low-hanging fruit for all kinds of advocates for more equitable college admissions practices, and it just so obviously runs counter to their goals. It seems to offer an additional advantage to students who already have the advantages of college-going and college-graduating parents and the attendant likelier family wealth, etc. I spoke to Anthony Jack, who is one of those advocates and also a Harvard sociologist who studies low-income students in elite schools.
Legacy admission is about rewarding privilege. Those not only who come from wealthier families, not only those who are white, but those who are connected. There's no justification except for we like our own.
Jack is also an Amherst alum himself, one of those low-income students who came to campus in the past few decades. I asked him whether he felt torn about surrendering the legacy preference that would go to his own children. He said there's no question about, you know, giving up his values for some personal advantage there.
Max, you called Amherst a trailblazer. Do you think that other colleges are going to follow suit, follow this trail?
Well, you've seen the same change made at Johns Hopkins University, certainly mounting pressure elsewhere. Certainly, there are, in general, more moves at elite schools to bring down barriers to admission. But then again, many schools that use legacy admissions are not need blind, as Amherst is. In other words, they rely explicitly on wealthier families paying full tuition to subsidize lower income students who are attending for less or for free. So with that in mind, Arun, Catherine Hill, herself the former president of Vassar College, who is working now to democratize access to that sort of institution, says even if many schools do end their legacy preferences, they'll still end up giving a certain proportion of seats to better off students.
I think with all the challenges that American higher education is facing and all the inequities in access to great schools, the legacy issue is a distraction. All this focus on legacies is missing the point that these schools with all these resources could go out and admit and find and educate a lot more first generation and low income students and help them change their lives. And that's what we should be talking about.
Now, Hill, to be clear, applauds Amherst, especially for that new investment in financial aid. She just wants us looking at the big picture here.
Do we have the sense that this decision points to something bigger going on in the current higher ed landscape?
Yes. For instance, at Smith College, a similar institution right by Amherst, made the decision to end the use of student loans and admissions in a similar kind of spirit just this past week. But I think it's about what's going on even more broadly on the American socioeconomic landscape. Some of the trends of the past few years, lost jobs for many and a soaring stock market for others, have dramatized the inequality at work in this country. And so you are going to have some institutions like Amherst or Vassar respond by, you know, feeling a certain degree of guilt, an imperative to do better, and by changing policies that are seen as giving privilege to the already privileged.
Max, this is going to be fascinating to watch this trend play out further. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That's WBUR reporter Max Larkin. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Hurricane-force winds from an early-season nor'easter swept through coastal New England earlier today, bringing flooding, downed trees, and outages to roughly 500,000 people in Massachusetts. National Weather Service meteorologist Rodney Chai says the storm was what's known as a bomb cyclone, and it happens when air pressure readings drop sharply within a 24-hour period.
Over in Nantucket, the pressure actually dropped 28 millibars in 24 hours, so that exceeded the criteria. So this is indeed a bomb cyclone, but it really means a rapid deepening of a low-pressure system.
The Steamship Authority suspended all of its service between the Cape and Islands because of the storm. On the T, there have been delays on the Red Line and several commuter rail lines, all because of downed trees. In other news, a new court geared towards processing people living at the encampment at Mass and Cass in Boston's South End could soon be operating inside the nearby Suffolk County Jail. In a statement, the Massachusetts trial court says it's working with probation officials and public defenders to have virtual court sessions running inside the jail as early as next week. But the state's public defender agency, which would represent those brought to the court, is opposed to the plan. Anthony Benedetti is chief counsel for the Committee for Public Counsel Services.
I don't view our role as partners. We are there to advocate on behalf of our clients.
Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins has said the court would be used for those living in the encampment who have outstanding criminal warrants. Meanwhile, more than 500 children and adults were left waiting in local emergency rooms last week as they waited for psychiatric evaluations and treatment. That's according to a new report from the Massachusetts Hospital Association. State Senator Julian Sear, who chairs the legislature's Joint Committee on Mental Health, says staffing shortages are making a longstanding problem even worse.
We have a number of beds that are offline in Massachusetts because of workforce right now. It is unacceptable that people who are needing acute, urgent health care are sitting, waiting in emergency departments, not for hours, not even for days, right? But in many cases, for weeks.
Sear made his remarks at a forum sponsored by health insurers who say they are committed to solving this problem. On the housing front, Governor Charlie Baker says he is not a fan of Boston mayoral candidate Michelle Wu's proposal to institute rent control. Baker says he would consider a bill on it, but he's generally not in favor. He argues that stabilizing rents for some properties, but not all, and not factoring income into who qualifies for rent control makes the policy unfair.
It doesn't give any kind of predictability at all to tenants or to landlords unless you happen to be in one of those units.
Baker would have to put his signature on any bill allowing rent control in Boston unless Democrats in the legislature override him. Boston's mayoral election is set for this coming Tuesday. And finally, Springfield-based Merriam-Webster has added more than 450 new words and phrases to its dictionary. The list includes vaccine passport and long COVID. There's also dad bod and fluffer nutter.
Fluffer nutter! Oh, you need
here at Consider This, we were a bit surprised that it took so long for Fluffer Nutter to make the cut for Merriam-Webster. After all, the French-Canadian confectioner Archibald Query started peddling marshmallow fluff door-to-door in Somerville more than a century ago. For its part, Merriam-Webster says the list of new words includes ones that have gained prominence in the last few years and others that have shown staying power. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since peanut butter and fluff, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Before you go, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, All Revved Up. Join hosts and reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price as they explore the intersection of faith, politics, and culture. New episodes of All Revved Up drop every other Wednesday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.